posted last week. Dearest Guru Mai, I'm concerned that when Rand leaves our dream work group, we will dissolve and will no longer have such ready access to understanding, inspiration, and inner and outer transformation that this work offers. Please give me a dream tonight which will help me to understand and know what to do to ensure our group continues, if it is your will, in an ongoing and regular manner and spreads knowledge and practice into our local communities. Thank you so very much, Ram Dass.
Well, all right then. What dream did you get?
Get some handcuffs out.
My former wife, Jean, and I are together. A large colored cat, it's female, pretty sure, walks past me, and I'm surprised to see it attacking my wife, or seemingly. And my wife is on her back, and this cat is sprawled across her torso, face to face. It's kind of like she's pinning my wife down like that. When I realize what's happening and fear my wife will be clawed, I go over to them and I gently pull the cat off without Jean or I getting clawed. The scene kind of skips and I'm sitting a few feet away and the cat walks by me with a smile on his face wearing some of my clothes. Green polyester trousers and a long-sleeved shirt. I'm surprised and amused at this. The cat never seemed ferocious or really intent on harm. She seemed to be playing, pinning my wife down with her spread-eagled body. That's the dream.
Okay. Who's Jean?
Jean is my former wife.
Your actual wife?
Yeah.
You are mentally ill, Ram Dass.
I take that as a compliment.
What's Jean like?
What was she like then?
How am I supposed to understand her? Yeah.
She was loyal and very set in her ways, self-limiting.
Loyal to what? Loyal to what?
To me. To me and our marriage and our household. Loyal to her Christian faith, which was Methodism.
What other qualities did she have?
Steady. Very steady. Good cook. Outstanding cook.
What is your moon? Scorpio?
Scorpio, yeah.
Scorpio moon?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jean is Scorpio. Steady. Consistent, constant, faithful, loyal, always focused on one bright attention-getting object.
Yeah, I'd never thought of that before.
And she's a good cook.
Excellent.
She's nurturing, she's caring, she's loving, she's playful. Was she playful?
No, not playful.
She's not playful?
No, not playful. No.
Jean wasn't playful?
No.
Oh, okay. The intuition is playful.
Okay.
The cat.
Yeah, the cat seems to be playful.
The cat, see, is the intuition and the dreaming state. We have intuition in all four bodies. We have the identity type and we have the intuition in each body. We have it in the waking state, we have it in the dreaming state, we have it in the causal state, and the supercausal state. So Jean and the cat represent the identity type and the intuition in the emotional mind.
Okay.
So you're watching them. Okay, and what are they doing?
Well, the cat comes over and...
First of all, what's Jean doing?
She's just kind of, she's like sitting on the floor. We're both sitting on the floor. I don't know where. Maybe our living room.
And how are you feeling?
At what point?
Before the cat comes in.
Rather content. I'm just pleased. I'm also confused about where I am, like, where is this?
What happens to make you confused about where you are?
It seems to happen in most every dream. Like, I'm suddenly dropped into this, and I don't quite know what's going on, and I'm trying to find out what's going on.
This is characteristic, Jonathan, of all dreams. As the dream opens and the dreamer is just in a scene that's created by the inner self. And it's created by the inner self, and the dreamer didn't create it, and the dreamer doesn't know what's going on. Why am I here? And the identity type is there, and the intuition is there. And in this dream, you're not aware of the intuition. You're only aware of yourself and your wife and the room that you're in. Are you aware?
Vaguely.
Vaguely aware of the room?
Yeah.
But mostly you're aware of...
I'm mostly aware of my wife, former wife, and then I become aware of this big cat walks by me.
Okay, now, were you aware that she was your former wife in the dream?
She seemed like my wife at that time. There wasn't a form.
Okay, so we can talk about her in terms of that this is my wife. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Because we'll just be present in the dream.
Yeah.
Okay. And you and Jean are thinking what?
At the opening of the dream?
Yeah.
What do we do about... Let's plan a trip.
Okay, is that your idea or hers or both?
My idea.
Okay. The best way to ask a question like this, you guys, is not the way that I did it. I'm being a little bit clumsy here in the way that I'm doing this dream work. The best way to do this is to say, what are you thinking? What are you two thinking? Whose idea? Planning a trip. Whose idea is it? Just like that. Whose idea is it? And don't do suggest. Is it your idea? Is it her idea? Because there you're suggesting stuff.
Yeah.
And projecting your own stuff into the dream. And whose idea is it?
It's my idea.
Okay. And what do you think about this idea?
I'm moderately interested in it.
Okay. Now, here comes the question of a thought, all right? There's a thought, let's plan a trip. What is your relationship with this thought? I'm moderately interested in it. Okay, is he attached to this concept? Not really. Does he believe in it? Maybe a little bit. Okay, there's a slight degree of belief in the thought, I want to plan a trip. What does Jean think about it?
Let's consider it. Let's consider it. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
now think about all of this in relationship to your question.
I'm very interested in this group. Continuing. It's not a moderate thing.
Okay, but in the dream there is a a question arising about planning a trip with Jean, and I'm only moderately interested in planning this trip.
I'm fishing around, you know. I'm trying to gain some sort of satisfaction in the moment.
Yeah.
And that was, that's what came up.
For one thing, I said to you in the way you said, well, why stay here? Come to Albuquerque with me. I said the same thing to you. You know, come, said the same thing to Dominic. I said the same thing to Jonathan. You know, I want a bunch of people to go to Albuquerque with me. I don't want to go out there by myself, for God's sake. let's just take this whole little circle and transfer it out there.
All right.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. And so you're planning a trip with Jean, and you're only moderately interested in this trip, and she's moderately interested in it too, not moderately interested. Okay, so now you're sitting there and you're thinking, what else are you thinking?
Well, let's see how this plays out. We'll just throw it around a little bit. And maybe something exciting will come of this.
Okay, maybe something exciting will come of it. You can feel it happening, right? So here comes this cat.
That's the possibility I'm looking for. I just threw out a piece of bait.
Yeah.
And see where it would, if any fish bite it. Bit.
Okay. All right. A bait that you're not interested in yourself. Or?
Could be.
All right. Okay. Okay. Good. Now, what's this cat coming in here?
What do you mean, what's this cat coming in?
Yeah, you tell me this cat walks.
Yeah, this big cat walks by me. I mean, pretty big.
How big?
Big enough to cover my wife's torso and hold her down.
Okay, big as a dog almost.
Oh, well, what size dog? Yeah, I mean, big, I think I described it, big as her torso, and he has her spread eagle.
Okay, when the cat spreads its front paws and arms, does it cover your wife's arms, or does it just cover her torso?
No, it covered, his paws are clear out to where her arms are extended.
What about her hands? How far away are the cat's paws from her hands?
They're on her hands.
Okay, so that's how big that cat is.
Yeah.
That cat actually is as big as she is.
As big as her upper body.
Well, I mean, if the torso of the cat is up there and her paws reach all the way out to your wife's hands,
yeah,
then the front legs of the cat are as long as your wife's arms.
This cat's really having a good time.
This cat's having
He's so amused, or he or she is so amused with themselves.
Yeah, and now
really pulling off.
What are the back legs of this cat doing?
Well, they're kind of down about. I think they kind of hit my wife right about here. Let's see. I think it's got its paws dug in right about here.
Okay.
Kind of now, supporting itself. So it
now, what do you think about this cat?
Well, I'm kind of amused right now. But
In the dream, yeah.
I became a little concerned at this
cat.
Okay,
great. What happened before you became concerned? Now, see, Jonathan? What he's doing is he's being concerned that the cat is going to do something to his wife. Now that comes after the experience of the space in between, and that's a reaction.
I'm surprised and pleased that that cat's there, just as he's walking by me.
Right. Okay, good.
Where did you come from?
Now the cat gets up on top of your wife, spread eagle. And what's the first thing that you experience?
Concern.
And before you experience concern, what did you experience?
Anticipation, kind of wonder. Like, geez, what's going on? What's happening here?
Okay, between the question of what's happening here and the experience of concern, what happened?
Joy, amusement.
Okay. Can you tap into this joy and amusement?
Yeah.
Okay. When you tap into this joy and amusement and you look there, tell me what you see.
This cat is spread eagle on my wife, and he's loving her, and my wife is enjoying it. She's amused too. She's smiling and laughing a little bit that this cat came over. But
and what are you thinking now?
I'm relieved, and I'm pleased too that this fun is going on.
Okay. Now, what about the trip?
What trip?
You were thinking about talking to your wife about going on a trip.
I got what I wanted. I wanted some amusement, some excitement, some play, some...
Okay. Now, when you go into this space, Ramdas, I don't believe... I don't believe that we're done here yet.
Okay.
But in this space, go back and read your question again. But stay in this space of amusement and try to, while you're here, going back and reading this thing, keep in mind the object of meditation in the mind of the meditator. The realization of your identity with this joy by the force of your intent. Force yourself to, by your intent, to hold on to this joy and this amusement, this fun that you're having while you're reading this question. Can you read the question out loud?
Yeah, good. I'm wondering whether I'm wanting to hold on to that joy and if that's what I'm experiencing. Of course. I am concerned that when Rand leaves our dream world...
Are you holding on to it?
Yeah. We will dissolve and we will no longer have such... access to understanding, inspiration, and inner power transformation that this works on.
So now how do you see it all?
Suddenly heard Gurumai's voice, and I saw her, and she said, "Don't you trust me?" Mm-hmm. And thoughts of this were coming.
Yeah.
And that this joy, that everything was happening. Don't you trust me?
Mm-hmm. So now what do you know?
No worries.
Pardon me?
Don't worry about it. It'll be taken
and
care of.
And how do you feel about that?
Feel sad that I didn't trust Gurumai that she'd take care of this.
Okay. Now, you know, we can go through this again and again and again. because we only got a small taste of this thing. We didn't really get in there where the sun and the moon had set and gone up the Sushumna, where we didn't go that far. We still had contact with the sun and the moon out here, not going up through the Sushumna in the work that we did. But we got a taste of it enough so that you can get a picture here. And what is Gurumai in the middle of all of this?
She's the one who makes things happen.
She's the eye consciousness. Mm-hmm. This is the eye consciousness. Can you experience eye consciousness?
I'm experiencing.
Yeah. Do you trust?
Yes, that's the other thing I'm getting. I do trust. As soon as she said that,
yeah.
I felt sad that I didn't trust. And I got that sense of trust. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. It's important to realize that you do trust it.
I do trust.
Yeah. It's also important to realize that you maybe have slipped into a state where you were looking at something and wanting it and realizing that your access to that eye consciousness was dependent upon that. When in fact the structure of thought, intuition, and eye consciousness is in your mind functioning all the time, no matter where you are, under what other circumstances.
Yeah.
Whether you're in prison, whether you're free, whether you're rich, whether you're poor, whether you're living in 14,000 BC or 7,000 AD, or wherever you are or what you're doing, you always have access to that. You always have access to that. Do you trust that? To me, that's what this means. Now, I trust that, and
I also find this group a great support.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
In being there.
Yeah, I find it a great support too. And believe me, I am just as grateful that you guys come here to this as you are that I come here to this. And so on and so forth. And I don't want to lose it either. And I am not going to lose it, you know. But I'm going to experiment with trying to fulfill this request of going to New Mexico because of the importance of the relationship that the sun will have. My sun sign goes right down through the center of New Mexico. You know, when you look on that thing. But that isn't why I'm going there. That guy told me that Baba said I'm supposed to go there. And that it will influence the work better, that we'll have better groups, for example, that the people there will be more interested in it than they are here or somewhere else, and that it will influence my health so that I'll be able to live with more vigor and more so on and so forth. Even though I have access to the sun inside because of the way that the sun and the moon set and ascend in the Sushumna, so that I'm able to meditate on that myself. I've learned how to do that. People are concerned that I don't get the experience of the eye consciousness in the dream work because I'm always doing it for you and you and you. But believe me, I'm getting the experience also. And I know that the experience that we just got was a little smidgen of an experience in comparison to the experiences that we sometimes get. Okay? So...
Well, can he work with that cat? Like, what's the cat's reaction?
Well, the cat, see, is the intuition in the emotional mind. Mm-hmm. And the cat is... This whole thing needs work, like along the line that you're going. And the reason it needs work is because Ramdas is identified with an identity type, which is called Sagittarius. The opposite to that is Gemini. The moon is Scorpio. So what's the relationship between the Sagittarius Sun and the Scorpio Moon? It's a relationship of dominance. It's a relationship of domineering, of not taking the moon seriously. Okay, so he's here having this experience of, I want to keep this group going. And how do I do that? And in the dream, his wife appears. And a cat, a big old cat comes along and pushes her over and jumps up on top of her spread eagle in a way that concerns Ram Dass. He's wondering about her safety, when in fact there isn't a question about her safety. There was a question about her safety before the cat came. With you taking her apart to see what she's made out of, and taking parts of her and putting them together to see what you can make her into, right? Her safety was in danger before the cat came.
Because of my attitude towards her.
Yeah. Now this aha that you just got, what happened there? Where you just laughed?
I'm laughing at the truth of it.
Yeah, but what does it mean? The truth of that, what does that mean?
That I was acting in that way, and I never... Well, it was the word... she was in danger from my attitude, the way I was thinking of her.
Yeah.
Instead of being supportive and accepting her as she was.
Now, what does that mean to you?
Harmony.
And when you look at her in this condition of harmony, what does she look like?
She's quite beautiful.
Okay, now
smiling,
we're
getting, happy, very happy.
Now we're getting somewhere, see?
Yeah.
And when you and your wife are smiling at each other and you're happy, tell me about the trust of Guru Mai. What is her trust? How does she trust Guru Mai? That was a trick question.
How does his wife trust Guru Mai?
Yeah, in the dream. Because she told me that she's true and faithful.
She's smiling knowingly.
To her Methodist. See, she's a Methodist. He thinks she's a Methodist. She doesn't like Guru Mai. He thinks that about her. So.
Oh, okay.
So now, in the dream, he's looking at her, and I'm asking, does your wife trust Guru Mai? And
she's smiling knowingly about what Guru Mai said to me.
Yeah. Does she trust her?
Well, yeah, or she wouldn't.
Yeah, okay. Your wife does trust her. Excellent. So emotionally, you do trust Guru Mai, because your wife represents your emotional mind, your mental state, your dream state. And emotionally, you trust her. But rationally...
I had forgotten that.
Rationally,
yeah.
You're wondering about it.
Yeah.
Because you're concentrated on this other thing, where this is an awakening that happens week after week, and then there's this other stuff that's going on. And how is all of this different from Guru Mai?
It's not.
Okay. Then,
it's all her play.
Is there anything else?
It's all our play.
Okay. How are you with all of that then, Ram Dass?
I'm just fine.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happy.
Okay, very good. Yeah, Sadhguru Nath Maharaj. Hail to the Guru, the inner light, the sun of the mind.
The eye of consciousness.
Okay. Ram, Dominic, do you have a dream?
Ram? Yes, I do.
Okay, good.
Chatting. Not last night, but the night before.
Wasn't last night, but the night before. I heard two names.
Before last.
I went downstairs to let him in. They hit me on the head with a rolling pin. The rolling pin was made of brass and set me sprung right on my... Oh, hi, Melanie.
I have another version of that. The man that wrote the Home Sweet Home never was a married man. He never had no loving wife to hit him with a frying pan. She'll meet you at the door when you go to come in, knock you on the head with a rolling pin. The man that wrote the Home Sweet Home never was a married man.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay.
You can't win.
Okay. Yeah, you better keep winning, honey. You better keep winning. You gotta win. We can't lose at this game.
Right.
The intention is that we should all win at this game. How you doing, Jonathan?
Pretty good.
Are you having fun?
Yeah.
Good.
Having fun yet?
Yeah. Okay, so my intention, or my message to the inner self was to recognize the infinitesimal in the dream.
Okay.
Okay. And it didn't happen. So I'm in a large restaurant, but it's like a diner. It has windows, and it's like one of those 50s diners, but it's big. So there's a lot of light. And Gurumai was coming in, and people were waiting to see her. And so there was a long line of people, and she was the very last one come in the door. And the person in front of her opened the door for her. And I was waiting for her to recognize me, but I didn't think she did.
You were waiting for her to recognize you, but you think that she didn't recognize you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's
one
fine.
Section of the dream.
Okay.
But that's enough.
All right. So then, just to take the question, and then to take the dream, and to set them up, you know, set the one over here, I want to be able to recognize the infinitesimal.
Yeah. The surprise was...
Pardon me?
The surprise was her coming into the whole dream.
Okay, and then in the dream you're in a big restaurant, which is a place where, what are they doing there?
They eat, they have, you know, they socialize. And
was there any socializing? And
yes, it was
eating?
Busy, there was noise, there was people talking.
Were there anybody eating?
Didn't notice that, but it was like an obvious thing.
Okay, it's an obvious thing that you overlooked.
Yes. It was an obvious thing that I overlooked. But what significance is that if people were eating? Is this one of your trick questions again?
No, I'm just playing my game, you know? I'm having fun.
Okay.
And I do it on the basis of what you say to me. I only can play with what you give me.
Okay. The reason it's a restaurant is there's dishes clamoring and there's waitresses. And I know it's a restaurant.
So dishes are clamoring, which means
what? There's waitresses going up and down the aisles and we're sitting in booths and I'm sitting there.
And what else are the waitresses doing to make the dishes clamor?
Picking them up, setting them down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, are you becoming more aware of the dream as we go through to talk about this stuff?
No.
Can you see anything else in the dream now that you couldn't see before?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and you see a long line of people. Are they in there waiting, or are they a long line of people coming in?
Well, like half of the line is in the restaurant, and the other half is outside coming in the door.
Okay, and what are you feeling?
Okay. Until I see Gurumai.
Pardon me?
Until I see Gurumai.
Okay, now do you know that she's coming before she comes?
No.
Okay, so what happens when you see her?
I'm surprised as hell.
Okay, and in the middle of the surprise, what happens?
I think I want to be recognized by her. Oh, there's Dominic.
Okay. And what happens?
I know she recognizes me, even though she doesn't look at me.
That's funny, isn't it? Huh?
Yeah.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
What does that happen? How does that make you?
Joyful.
You got it then?
Yeah, I got it.
You got the infinitesimal?
Yeah.
You got it really?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I can feel it.
And what's happening with the energy? Now, I see here at this point, Dominic,
yeah.
I declare that there is an upsurge of energy.
Yeah.
Okay? And that the sun and the moon set and enter the Sushumna, and that the adept goes into the great sky. Do you feel it?
It's something in my stomach.
What's happening?
Lower than my solar plexus. Just something.
Okay, what?
Just like an itch.
Name the name. What is the name of the itch?
The name of the itch is excitement.
Okay. Excited about?
About being recognized.
Okay. Now, can you make the intention, I am going to be recognized by Guru Mai?
Yeah.
Okay. What does she do when you say, I am going to be recognized by her?
She sits down and then she looks at me.
And when she looks at you, what happens?
It's like meeting an old friend. She sits down and she says, you know, how are you down there?
Okay, now, what is happening inside of your belly now?
It's still in that one place, like right here.
What is it?
Just like a heat or, like, it's more like an itch.
Okay, look, Dominic, do you realize that you have a need here?
Yeah.
Do you realize that you have a need to be recognized?
Yeah.
Okay, what are you willing to do in order to make yourself available to recognition?
Follow my intuition.
And what does your intuition say? How are you supposed to get her attention? What do you need to do to get her attention so that she can recognize you? When she walks in the door. When she walks in that door, her full attention needs to go on Dominic Nuzzo so that there's two people in that place. Guru Mai and Dominic Nuzzo, and for you there's nobody else there, and for her there's nobody else there also. What do you need to do in order to get her? What do you need to think in order to get that recognition from her? What do you need to believe about yourself?
That I'm not the concept of myself.
Okay.
That I am greater than that.
Okay.
But that's easier said than done.
No kidding. I mean, that's true. But it's a step forward, isn't it?
It is.
It's a step forward.
Live in your intuition.
Pardon me?
But how and what do I think?
Okay, so then I am not the concept. I'm not my concept of myself.
Yeah.
So there you are. You're sitting there, and you're your concept of yourself, right? When you're sitting there?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, is it your concept of yourself that wants to be recognized by her? Or is it your intuition of yourself that wants to be recognized by her?
My intuition.
Of yourself.
Yeah.
Not your concept.
No.
And in your concept of yourself, you just continue to sit there. But in your intuition of yourself, what do you think you're supposed to be doing?
Get up and say hi and say and ask her, let's sit down.
I'll be a son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha. Ho ho ho. Okay, so here comes Guru Mai through the door. And what does Dominic do? Yeah. Hi, Guru Mai. How you doing? Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Holy Jesus. Jumping Jiminy.
Only you'd have the balls to do that.
Yeah. I wouldn't have the balls to do it either. I'd be as... bump on a log, sitting there and dying of lung myself.
What is he signed into?
Gemini.
And so is it? So he has to ask for what his need is.
Yes.
Okay. So now, Dom, how are you feeling now?
Pretty good.
Okay. How's the itch in the stomach?
It's still there. Okay. It hasn't moved. It's sort of like...
Okay, now I want you to make up your mind right at the moment when you see Guru Mai coming in the door. I'm going to get up and go over and greet her. Because I want her to recognize me. And I'm going to make it possible for her to recognize me by going over to her.
Yeah, there's some resistance there.
Pardon me?
There's some resistance. Mm-hmm.
There's some resistance there. Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. So now we're on to something, you see? Okay, now.
Because if I think about it, like if it would really happen, if I would have the courage to do that, you know, my identity comes back and says, Jesus.
Yeah. Okay, now that's...
What if she just avoids me and ignores
she
me?
She won't do that.
Okay, but see there... Now see there, is that an intuition?
That's a reaction.
Or is that a reaction?
That's a reaction.
Okay, now what I'm doing is training you to be able to recognize how to interpret the functioning that's going on inside of your own mind. So is this an intuition or is it a thought? Is it an intuition or is it a reaction? Okay, what is the value for you of the reaction? The reaction says, she won't even be interested in me.
Right.
Okay, so what is your attitude towards that?
That I know it's just a false concept.
And what are you going to do about it?
Well, I'm going to push myself to make the intention.
Because I want her to recognize
me. Yeah, because I want her to recognize
me. Okay, so I am going to go and greet her, and I'm not going to be afraid about whether all of this
stuff...
Yeah,
and she's got a funny look on her face, like she knows I'm trying.
Yeah.
You know how she gives you that look?
Yes.
She knows what you're about.
Right.
And she knows what you're trying to do.
She knows that you're there fighting in between your intuition and your reaction in your mind. What's she pulling for?
That's the intuition.
She's pulling for you to align yourself.
She's very friendly.
Pardon me?
She's very friendly and loving about it.
Yeah.
She wouldn't, like, put you down for that.
She would never do that.
No.
You know why? Because she knows that.
Yeah.
And believe me, I have been in that moment with her where I have had to overcome the reaction in my own mind, and because I knew that it was a reaction because I had trained myself. And I'll tell you, bam, 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 we were in the car there together for about 7 or 8 minutes. And it was one thing after another. And she was right there with me the whole way and laughing and carrying on and having a great time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll never forget it. It was an intense, powerful moment. And she said to Divya, I got to ride with your husband.
She never has to worry about the character type taking over.
She proves to you, if you know this stuff, she proves to you that she is in the great sky, and that she knows how to be in the great sky. and that she knows how to ignore the reaction of the mind. And she does it over and over and over again. And we've all seen so many testimonies of that happening. Okay, so Dominic, how are you doing?
I'm good.
And what happened here?
It's a very nice warm feeling, and I'm pretty sure it'll be there all day.
Okay,
it's,
and
it's,
you got...
It's funny that it's in the stomach. You know, it's like localized.
Right.
In the stomach.
That's where fear arises, and it changes into a warm feeling.
Yeah.
And you're not afraid now.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have recognition?
Yeah.
Does she recognize you?
What an amazing discipline. Man.
Okay, and do you know how to discover the infinitesimal?
No, I don't.
By watching the reaction of the mind.
Yeah.
And do you, is it easy, Jonathan, to tell when the mind is reacting?
Is it easy?
Is it easy to tell when the mind is reacting?
Yes,
I guess.
It's always easy.
Yeah.
Right. You know this, right, Ramdas?
Yeah.
It's always easy.
If I'm willing to pay attention.
It's not easy to tell what it's reacting to all the time, but it's easy to tell that it's reacting.
Mm-hmm. But when you wake up from a dream and you write it down, like you're still in a stupor, and like, you know, what? You're writing these sentences out and none of it makes much sense, you know.
May I ask a question regarding to that statement?
Please.
As I understand it, an insight into that is, the dream is more about, we ignore the intuition. The dream is really about what's not there, as opposed to what is there.
Exactly.
In other words, we what's there? We want to discover. Here's the reactive mind, or whatever you call it. Here's the thing, and that's what we see in the dream. Mm-hmm. The dream work is to say, well, what is not remembered?
What is the unseen cause behind the seen effect?
Right. So that's what we want to get.
And so most people, when they're doing dream work, they're looking at the effect,
right,
and they're trying to figure out what the cause is. This dream work, we want to see the cause. We don't want to try to figure out what the cause is so that we know intellectually what the cause is. We want to experience the cause.
What's not presented by the dream is what we're looking for.
But see, the thing is although it isn't presented in the sense that it's not presented in the form of a thought,
right,
it is presented in the form of eye consciousness. And eye consciousness cannot be seen,
right,
like thoughts can be seen. Eye consciousness is what Leibniz called the infinitesimal between the concept and the intuition. The infinitesimal is smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest. So that's why Leibniz. The Indian scriptures call it smaller than the smaller, smallest, and greater than the greatest. Go ahead.
Oh, I see. So, go ahead.
And Dominic says, I can't experience that. I want to know how to experience the infinitesimal. I want to know how to experience that which is smaller than the smallest.
But it's more like I want to catch it. And be aware of where that is.
Okay, now the thing here is this guy says...
What? He said that there's the...
Yes, he did. He said what I just... He said what I just now said.
I'm a sweat on.
It's hot stuff.
This alone is the attainment of the nectar of immortality. This indeed is to catch hold of oneself. So... You want to catch a hold of it, and it wants you to catch a hold of yourself. And when you catch a hold of yourself in the middle of that space between the thought and the intuition, then you have allowed it to take a hold of you. And the one that has taken a hold of you is your own identity. And then you and your identity are one. And up until that, you're looking at your identity as an object of your an object of your perception.
The reason I got up, I'm feeling very nauseous.
I'm feeling nauseous too.
Are you?
Okay, go get a drink of water.
Yeah, that's what I guess.
I just need to get up. It's something with my stomach. Some impurity, you know.
They say in Middle Eastern times that the fear is from the liver, which is not the solar plexus, but it's not your actual stomach, because it's the stomach, but it's actually, they say it's this part here. But it feels like this.
Yeah, but the bile goes into the stomach, and the stuff from the pancreas goes into the stomach.
Into
too.
The duodenum.
No.
It goes into the small intestine.
But
I'm saying the liver somehow. I'm not sure if that's what they didn't know. They may not even know, but it's not. It's somewhere in this. It's not the here. It's sort of here.
But how are you doing?
Okay, better.
Now, what did we do wrong?
Nothing.
What did you do wrong?
I have no control over what my body is doing. It's okay. It is. And impurity doesn't mean that there's something wrong. It's just coming up. I remember I was eating apples, and I have some. There's some impurity with apples with me, even at the ashram. And then I remember I was eating apple, and then I feel nauseous. And I just,
oh well, you have an apple.
I had an apple over there.
Over there. Yeah.
And then this was happening, and one of Gurmai's talks in the Shaktimanda, she started talking. She was talking right to me because she says some people, they eat apples and they feel nauseous. That's not the apple that's impure. It's some impurity in your body. She said that right after I experienced it.
Oh, so the apple is cleansing. So I think so, yeah.
It's got a lot of malic acid. Affects the gallbladder.
But anyway, that nauseous is...
Yeah, nauseous is so good. Now.
I'm sorry if I sounded icky, but it was all wet. I was like...
Oh, no. No, I sprayed myself here. I'm not really sweating.
Oh.
All right, so it's interesting, huh?
You're getting clarity.
What?
Getting some clarity about it.
You getting some clarity?
Yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah. The more you're exposed to it.
I think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Well, I don't think sliced bread's that great. That's the best thing since the sandwich was.
You know, Johnson, even before I met you,
yeah,
way back in like 1998, 99, I said to myself as well as to other people, this thing that I've got here is the greatest discovery in the history of the world.
You told me that.
Yeah.
It's the greatest discovery in the history of the world, this thing that I'm on top of.
Well, now,
and I find it confirmed in this scripture, which I think is dedicated to the whole thing. I think this whole scripture, these whole 52 verses, right, are dedicated to this process of thought, intuition, and eye consciousness. And the dynamic problem of becoming aware of it and then being able to stay in it once you become aware of it. And the whole thing ends by saying, but when he is firmly established in one place, that is then generated in and withdrawn by him at will. His state becomes that of the universal subject. Thus he becomes the Lord of the wheel of energies. I revere the wonderful speech of the Master, whose words and their meaning are marvelous. It is the boat that carries one across the fathomless ocean of doubt. And that's how it ends.
Fathomless ocean of doubt.
The fathomless ocean of doubt. And I think that if we could really get on top of this whole thing of thought, intuition, and eye consciousness, the way that it happens in the dream and the way that it happens in the waking state, and that we can start training ourselves, that we can be riding in that boat across the fathomless ocean of doubt, and that we won't doubt ever again, won't have any more doubt anymore. That's what I just really firmly believe.
Well, what I think is fascinating is like this concept of, you know, the space between the opening and the closing of the eyes, and then in that breath brings you into the, you know, this infinitesimal state. However, what's new and amazing about what you're doing is that in the dream state, no one has been able to decipher before all this, because first of all, the character types had to be discovered, and then you're able to learn how to work with those character types and the paradoxes. And so from there, you know, you're coming to you discovered that something that's going on in the dream state that is, you know, creating, that's coming to us, like you said to me years ago, you said that there's a stanza in the Gurgita that she's always trying to, trying to bring her
Kundalini Stava, huh?
Yeah, maybe it's Kundalini Stava, right?
Kundalini is always trying to uplift.
The Kundalini is always looking for a way to get into the mind of the
uplift, right. Bring them in. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember you repeating.
When you talk like this, Melanie, I want to have you for breakfast. I want to have you for lunch. I want to have you for supper, because you're my friend. When you talk like this, you're totally, absolutely, 100% my friend. Yeah, and I love you for this, because what you just said there was taking what we're doing and bringing it in to focus in this reality. That without the without Alvaro's awareness of character type, and then without my ability to see that the intuition is a higher hypothesis to this, and that this is leading you from this to that, and then to understand that it's going on in relationship to every situation that we're in life. And Leibniz, who calls it the infinitesimal, also has a big treatise on what he calls situation analysis. Analysis situs, he called it. The analysis of the situation. And what we do in the dream work is we take a situation in life and we analyze that situation in terms of what we think about it, in terms of what we intuit about it, and in terms of what our eye conscious experience of that whole situation is. And that we're learning to do what Leibniz, who was a meditator, learned how to do also. And he set this forth already from 1685 until 1716, when he died, as a method for meditation, as a method for doing mathematics, as a method for doing scientific discovery with light, with physics, with theology. He wrote a book called Theodicy. You know, the journey through the theory of God. Leibniz, Theodicy. And he was a student of Nicholas of Cusa and a student of Johannes Kepler. And Kepler saw the sun as the unifying harmonic center of the universe. And that all the planets revolve around this sun. And then he said, wouldn't it be wonderful if we in human life had a person like that around whom we could revolve the way all of the planets revolve around the sun, who would be our teacher and who would keep us in the harmony. And so all of this is something that I'm aware of, you know. And I want there to be 1,000 such suns in the world, of people who have got, you say there are 200 dream work centers. Let's let them all know this, so that they can all be doing this kind of dream work.
Well, exactly. They're doing Jeremy Taylor dream work and other people.
And it isn't mine. It isn't mine. It belongs to everybody. But it has to be done in this way, where you know, I have a form of thinking that is enshrouded in an identity type. This identity type causes my thought to be limited. In the same way that Kurt Gödel said about these mathematicians, that they were trying to make mathematics represent all of reality. Bertrand Russell and a bunch of assholes like that. And Kurt Gödel came along and said, your mathematics is a closed system. Your system, you can't prove anything within your system using the methods that are there within the system. So a closed system of thought is where you can't prove the truthfulness of a thought on the basis of accessing other thoughts that are all within that system. So you can't be a Gemini and say, I want Guru Mai to acknowledge me. And the way that I want her to acknowledge me is I want her to acknowledge me without me having to do anything. I don't want to have to be like a Sagittarian and reach out and grab a hold of her. I want her to acknowledge me while I'm still here inside of this thing. And so she comes in and she doesn't look at you. And that isn't satisfying to you. In order for you to get satisfaction, you have to leave that system and go into the free space between that and another system. And so all of this is the systematic thinking of the dream work that I do. And it's all very scientifically elaborate like that. The last time that Phil was here, he was saying, your dream work is very scientific. And I looked at him like, how do you know that? You know, did Jonathan tell you that? I didn't ask this. I said to myself, did Jonathan tell him this is scientific? Or is he experiencing the scientific nature of it? Because this work is strictly, totally scientific. In the sense that this guy was a scientist, and that Johannes Kepler was a scientist, and Leibniz was a scientist, Socrates was a scientist. The guy who wrote the Spandakarikas was a total scientist. This is a science of reality. The stanzas on vibration are an absolute total science of reality that are teaching you that you can know it, and that when you know it, you have to learn how to be able to catch hold of yourself in that space. So that when you can become firmly established in that one place, that is then generated and withdrawn by you at your will. His state becomes that of the universal subject.
But they're aware that there's divinity.
Pardon me?
They're aware of divinity.
Yeah.
Which most scientists that I know of are not.
Leibniz was aware of God.
Right.
He was aware of divinity. He wrote it all. He wrote all of his work because he was so interested in giving mankind hope of the divinity of reality.
But most people think of scientists, they don't think of scientists that way.
But
people that are, you think of religious people as being aware of divinity, but they're devoid of divinity.
Of course, and we know that all of that is the popular way that is controlled by the people who control the media and who control the politics and so on and so forth. And we don't care about them because we're living here in a cavern off the side of the road of popular opinion. We're not involved in
No, it's
well, a lot of scientists believe in God, you know.
Einstein.
Yeah, I mean, the point is...
But most people are not, like children when they're taught in school.
No, because...
They're not taught that anything like that.
No, that science in school is a different thing than higher science, yeah.
But the mainstream idea about science... And when I was studying humanities over at City College, I remember I had to do a field trip over to the science department. I went to that building, and I had to interview someone. And I had the experience that those people had more of a state of wonder and light in them than all the people who were in politics and the humanities and writing and this and that. It was like the science, some of the science geeks had more light in them. Yeah. I was aware of something, you know, like mm-hmm. like they, because they know the limits, you know,
right.
or something. They're seeing something, they're seeing an absolute, they're seeing an, they're looking at something that's real, in a sense.
Yes.
You know, whereas in the humanities and politics and all, this is, these are all the product of thought constructs.
And you realize also when you're in that state of wonder that that's reason enough for being.
Right, exactly. It's
just to be right, in that state exactly. of wonder, you don't need anything more for your life than
right.
that.
Right, right.
Let's back to Kepler, too, and watching the LaRouche video on him. When he discovered how the planets were in a certain distance from the sun, that was it was mathematically perfect, and that their orbits were elliptical, not circular, but that there's one area where no planet could exist, and there you have the asteroid belt because it. That area exploded, whatever was there.
There was a planet there that blew up.
How he came to know this is divine itself.
Through the same process that we're doing it. Because he had his thought, and he believed it. He believed that Ptolemy was Ptolemy's concept of the universe. And then he started observing, and he recognized that there were contradictions. And then he realized that these contradictions are paradoxes. And so then he formed new... He got experiences of God. And from that he created conjectures in his mind of what the whole thing could be like. And then he would set up whole systems of higher species of thought. That this has to be like this, this has to be like this, this has to be like this.
And the seven harmonics, and that's how classical music was born.
He's the father of modern classical music, because he said that music has to be composed according to the harmonies of the spheres. And he wrote a whole book called Harmonicum Mundi, The Harmonies of the World. And Bach, who was aware of him, started composing in this way. And all of this stuff happened in Germany. All these guys are Germans. Mm. Why? Because Nicolas of Cusa was a German. Leonardo da Vinci was not a German, but he was a student of Nicolas of Cusa. He was an Italian, yeah. Right. But what happened? But what happened with Nicholas? What happened when Nicholas of Cusa took over Leonardo and Luca Pacioli, who was also Italian, and these guys started creating the Renaissance with Nicholas of Cusa in the tradition of Dante Alighieri, who was also Italian. What happened? Venice came in and destroyed all of that shit. And they made it impossible for that kind of idealism to exist in Italy, and it had to move to Germany. And they eventually destroyed it in Germany too through World War I and World War II.
Oh, so this gentleman who was Italian was in Germany. Wait a
minute. Nicholas of Cusa is a German.
It sounds Italian, Nicholas.
Nicholas.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, he was from a city in Germany called Kues on the Mosel River.
Have you read any of his work, Noah?
I've been on the Mosel River.
Nothing bad to say about the Italians.
What, Jonathan?
I said, you got nothing bad to say about the Italians, only the Jews. But anyway.
Oh, well.
You're in Dominic's house. No.
Yeah, no.
Well, Einstein was Jewish, but Einstein would say that imagination was the most important function, you know, of living.
Right. And
some of LaRouche's best people are Jewish.
No, kidding.
Jeffrey Steinberg.
Doesn't matter.
No.
Harley Schlanger.
I know.
They were born Jewish.
What, you sit here?
Religious people.
No.
They're born Jew, but they never darkened the door.
Now that you've interrupted my...
Right.
They never grew up in the culture.
Exactly.
You didn't grow up in the culture
either.
No,
you
either.
Grew up in the culture, but not the religion. But there's a not religious kind of secular culture.
That's funny.
Right.
That's the culture I
grew up in. Yeah.
But not a religious culture.
No.
Anyways.
That's not dark.
Melanie didn't grow up in the culture either.
That is so cool.
What?
That we didn't grow up in the culture?
No. This whole conversation about
culture.
This needs to be on videotape.
Is that
Randy
marijuana?
Needs to teach.
Looks like a bag of shit, man. What are you doing?
Is it?
Start growing it, man.
Is it marijuana?
Sense of me, man.
No.
I'm getting dizzy. What
are you?
What did you say?
Did you say it was marijuana?
Mm-hmm. It looked like a bag of stuff the way he was rolling it up there.
So you know what it looks like.
Well, yeah, I do. I've seen it before. Hey, Melanie, we should have it on videotape.
Yeah, you should. I'd love to see you teach Nicholas de Cusa, like you could teach stanzas on vibration. I think you need a series.
It's a study. It's a what?
You need a series on tape of all of these different things.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You do.
All right, good.
We should get a football toilet.
Tell him that.
Let me see about it.
How are we going to afford to get something to tape Randy?
Just tell Dominic what you just said to me.
We need to have Randy teaching on tape Nicolas de Cusa and these other guys, you know?
I know.
Because you see, all of this stuff has made it possible for me to do dream work.
Right.
Yeah.
I study all of these things, and all of these things have given me insight into what's going on in the relationship between thought, intuition, and eye consciousness in my mind. And then what happens is I formulate.
That'll just bring it out here, John. You want to sit here?
No,
I formulate.
You want me to put the fan on you?
No, I'm okay.
You need to get a fan. We have another little fan.
It says it's going to blow on hot air.
I think so.
Well, but you have a window here, so if you open that, then you'll have cross ventilation.
Maybe not.
For example, when you first came to the Dream Workshop in 2002.
With Alvaro?
No. In 2003, when Benjamin was a newborn baby, my house, I was studying this paper by a guy who was writing a paper on...
I remember that paper.
He was writing a paper on Bach, on this German mathematician, Georg Cantor.
Yeah.
And what's his name? The Jewish guy who went to Princeton and became a friend of Einstein's.
Oh.
Who I just talked about.
Geitel? No, not.
Kurt Gödel. And this paper was about that paradox.
Right.
And in this paper, he showed that the paradox to the hypothesis is always a higher hypothesis. And I had never known that before. And so then I had this hypothesis that what we're experiencing in the intuition, what Alvaro called the opposite alternative, was a higher hypothesis to the what Alvaro called the core character type. And at that time, I was calling it the character type and the opposite alternative. So on this Saturday morning, when the people are coming to my house to do this workshop, I'm in this room reading this thing that this is a higher hypothesis. And I start underlining this and start thinking about it and meditating on it. And then while we were in the workshop that day, and Avi was there, and his girlfriend, what's that girl's name?
Oh, the pretty one, right. The one who was
Katie?
The daughter.
Katie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Katie, and that woman from Mexico was there, and her daughter, and that was a big workshop. Anyway, and so in the whole thing, I was treating the space between the character type and the office alternative as, I was treating the office alternative as a higher hypothesis. And I was asking the dreamer to tell me what it looked like. And the dreamer started telling me that there was more light in the intuition than there was in the thought. And I started really testing it, see there, and getting it. And I saw it over and over for years after that there was always more light. And more beauty and more harmony and a greater promise for success and a greater promise for having what you want and to be able to do what you want to do in the higher hypothesis, in the office alternative. So I said, okay, we gotta name this stuff different. It can't call it the natural character type and the opposite alternative. It isn't an alternative way of thinking. It's a higher hypothesis. And I had also studied Lyndon LaRouche's paper called On the Subject of Metaphor. And in this paper on the subject of metaphor, LaRouche made it clear to me that there comes a time when you have to, in the experience of paradox, you have to abandon every adherence and every attachment to the concept, to the hypothesis, that you have to leave it behind completely. And so I was discovering all of this in the middle of all of these papers, you see? You understand? That I didn't know that what Alvaro called the character type and the natural way of thinking and the opposite alternative, that there's a space between them where you have to absolutely pull your identity out of the one altogether, where you don't carry with it anything. You don't believe any part of that hypothesis anymore. None of the axioms, none of the postulates, none of the definitions of the hypothesis. You have to abandon attachment to all of it. And LaRouche taught me that in this paper on the subject of metaphor. And he used the Nicholas of Cusa on Learned Ignorance, where he's talking about how to figure the circumference of the circle, or the area of a circle, that you can't square a circle and figure the area, because a square is one species and a circle is another species. And so that you can't use the same species of mathematics to calculate the area of a square that you use to calculate the area of a circle. And so he had, in this learned ignorance, he had to invent a transcendental mathematics, which I don't understand, how to calculate the area of a circle. But all of this stuff taught me what I know about dream work. See, but I had to go through years and years and years of reading these papers and of testing this stuff, reading these papers and testing this stuff. Reading these papers and testing this stuff. And I've done it with you guys, you know, and other people who are not here. I studied this thing with Stephanie for a whole summer. The summer that she was trying to live with that woman across the street. She tried to live down at your place, you know, and I don't know. Did she end up finally living down at your place? Is that where she...
She did, and then she had to take an order of protection out against somebody who was stalking her. She's quite...
But where does she end up living? Anyway.
Back to the...
She ended up staying at my place. And anyway, she and I were studying this stanzas on vibration for like 3 months.
Wow.
And...
She's very brilliant.
Pardon me?
She's very brilliant in her own way.
Back to the issue of the
she's
camera.
She's a bonehead. What are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, she's not very she's
good. I've investigated it.
Well, in yeah. some ways.
Melanie.
Yes.
The camera, I've investigated it. And I went down to Best Buy, and I ran into a guy that does it professionally.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you told me. Yeah,
yeah, and he gave me a lot of good tips and stuff. But you're looking at, to do it right, you're looking at about $900. Because you need lapel mics,
right.
and you need a mixer, and you need a camera that can accept all of that. And they're only on $500 cameras now. They used to be on the less expensive digital camcorders.
Oh.
But now they've eliminated the jacks for the mixer and the lapel pins, so you have to step up to the next.
Well, can we go online and get one of those?
You can, but it's gonna run $900. So.
Online? No, I mean like on eBay or something. If you let me, tell me, I know people who know eBay like by the back of their hand. You tell me what we need, and I'll have them get it for me for less.
But one suggestion is yeah. that we all should kick in.
Right, okay.
I mean, each of us kick in some money.
Yeah, okay.
And buy this thing and then give it to Rand.
Okay.
And then and when he goes down and when he goes down to Albuquerque, he can continue to... And then we can join him whenever we can.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good idea.
I mean, that'd be one form of help to him, you know.
Right.
What are these tapes going to be used for?
For teaching.
Teaching whom?
Whoever wants to study it.
Well, I've seen a series of things on TV where they're teaching a course, you know.
Yeah.
Do you think anybody would understand it without actually having done a dream?
Well, if he shows doing dream work with someone, could have a couple of people could do dream work with a few people.
See, I got dreams on audio tapes, like here.
Yeah.
And
it's not the same.
And I need to get this down on printed page.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And condense from this hour and a half thing, I need to get it down to 15 minutes.
Right. But to also have to have it on video adds a whole other layer of teaching. And also,
it's a visual error. People, unless you put a tape in the car, where people will listen to tapes in their car, some of your lectures could be something that people could put on tape, you know, on a CD. Because people commute and they drive and they like to listen to stuff.
Plus, it's archival. You know,
right. Exactly.
These things are—they're being, you know, you're talking and stuff, and they, right. it needs to be recorded.
Right, right, right. And you need somebody like me
visually.
To be there,
yeah,
what you're talking to
don't
inspire you.
What do you think I keep talking to you about that for?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's possible, but you need an organization.
You're my babe.
Well,
I really want you to do it.
I want to do it too.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a small investment, really.
Because I think I'm
compared to
very
what he's
inspired doing. And excited about.
Yeah, you understand it.
You,
I mean,
know.
You got it.
Camera.
You got it in your heart, and,
right.
and, you, and you know
it
how to talk about
there for 10
it. And
years.
You understand so, the significance, the import,
I think it's a good idea, but,
the meaning that it has for the world,
good,
the
yeah.
benefits that the world could get out of it, and all that. You got it all down.
I know a guy who does this.
Even though you're Jewish.
I have the impression it's less.
Oh, man. Thanks for letting
me see the damn camera.
It's so interesting that all these people came out of Germany.
This is one of the reasons why World War I and World War II were fought on German soil. Because the powers that be want to destroy Germany. They really want to annihilate Germany. They want to annihilate this human creativity.
World War I was not fought in Germany.
You need a mixer and you need lapel jacks.
It wasn't?
No, it was fought in France and Belgium.
But German was
the Germans were into France.
I want to show you.
The Germans were, their economy was so demolished that that's how Hitler was partly in.
I'm talking about World War One.
Yeah.
No, but Germany
followed the economic problems in Germany followed World War One.
Yeah.
The blame for Germany, the blame for World War One, fell on the shoulders of Germany. England and France blamed Germany. Now, there's a whole series of videos here that are very beautiful. about how Bismarck was warning about how England wanted to create another 7 years' war. And so the British king got the German, Wilhelm, to kick Bismarck out because Bismarck wouldn't play.
Right, what I'm saying, I'm not disputing that. I'm saying World War I was not fought on German soil. It was fought on French soil and Belgian soil.
And that's all?
Yeah.
Why was it called a World War?
Well, it was also taking place in Austria. Austria had something going on. And I don't know, remember where else it was.
Yeah, and Germany wasn't involved in that war?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Definitely. They created the invasion. France and Belgium. So it always ended up on French and Belgian soil.
Where did it end up?
Same place.
I mean, where at the end of the war, where was the war being fought?
France and Belgium.
How did Germany lose if it wasn't being fought?
They gave up. They quit. Well, that's what the people... It was like too much. Too much of a drain on the country. It wasn't because they lost ground.
It wasn't a true world war. It was just a...
The Hundred Years' War was fought mostly on German soil. And the 30 Years' War from 1618 to 1648 was fought almost exclusively on German soil.
Yeah.
And the wars of 1848 to 52 were fought there. And
a lot of wars.
A lot of wars.
And anyway...
Well, I was asking about the roots of some of this.
And then in the Second World War, Leipzig and Dresden, which were the cities that were manifesting the great Renaissance culture of Germany, they were bombed the most extensively.
Dresden.
Once.
Pardon me?
Just once. Dresden was completely wiped out in one huge raid
right.
in 1944. Totally unnecessary
right.
to bomb them because they're like an old-fashioned, old-world city. They had no war industry
there. It was
just
to kill civilians, right?
No. Supposedly, the Germans were in retreat. The Russians were coming. The idea was that there were railroad lines going through Dresden. We'll knock them out. But the bombing was way more than that.
But the bombing, they bombed the churches, they bombed the...
Oh, yeah. I think they started huge fires and so on. I think the British bombed them at night.
Bombs.
The Americans during the day, they really wiped it out.
They used incendiary bombs.
Yeah.
Just to kill civilians.
Napalm bombs, too.
Yeah, those are incendiaries.
And, well, I was in Hamburg...
Where's Leipzig?
Leipzig is
is that near Dresden?
Yeah, it is. It's southeast of Berlin.
And so is Dresden, right?
Yeah.
It's south and kind of east.
Yeah, they were both in East Germany during the...
My father...
And Dresden was this beautiful old world city, you know, with lamplights and so on, real 19th century and before, and they just crushed them.
Well,
totally unnecessary.
When I first went to Germany in 1958 as a missionary, I was first stationed in Hamburg. And Hamburg was a city of streets with these five-story apartment buildings. And you could go to sections of Hamburg where you could go for miles and miles and miles. And all these apartment buildings, the shell, the outside brickwork was there. But there was no roof on them, and there were no windows in, and there were no...
Still in 58?
No floors.
Still
no
in
floors. Yeah. Still in 1958. Because Hamburg was changed from a city of 4 million in 1939 to a city of 2 million in 1945. And that's about the standard for most of those German cities. The 50% of the population was destroyed. Murdered in World War II. And when you find out why you know, I mean, we're taught that it's the Hitler mentality, the Richard Wagner mentality of we're the superior race and everything, but all Germans believe that. And when you go into Germany and you find out the love that these people have for each other and the love that they have for people. I had the best friends of my life in Germany. And you go there and you read people like this and people like Leibniz and people like Karl Gauss and people like Bernhard Riemann and all of these people who were the greatest scientists and greatest theologians in the history of the world. And they're all right there in Germany. And you find out that that's the real reason why the British have hated the Germans. And because the Germans promote human creativity more than anybody. They were more successful at protecting the Italian Renaissance that was destroyed in Italy. And it was transferred up into Germany, up into the area of Dresden and Leipzig. And it thrived and survived there after it got destroyed in Italy. But the Renaissance was born in Italy. It was the father of the Italian Renaissance is Dante Alighieri. And then the person who brought it all back to life was Nicholas of Cusa.
Well, it's a little interesting to me. My father, when he went to Germany after the war, he was in where was it divided? The communists in the Berlin? Is it not West Berlin? East or West Berlin?
Yeah.
And he said in West Berlin, there's all this color and life and you know happiness and joy and all this and you know incredible amount of great energy. And then he went into East Berlin and it's like nothing, like a flat land, nothing. You know, it was very scary.
What year was that? It had to be after...
Well, it had to be after World War II, obviously.
Well, it was before 1968, too.
Because
he was able to go back and forth.
Right.
I was there in 1970, and East Germany was still flattened from the Second World War.
But they had the wall already in 1970. Oh,
yeah. The wall came down later, but you know, my father died in, like, 72. So yeah. I think he was there, like... 60s sometime.
Right.
Early 60s maybe.
He and I were there at the same time because I was there in 1960.
Yeah, and the way he described it was so beautiful. But what's fascinating then on the other side is how many, why was Hitler able to come to power so and be so popular in a place where people should be enlightened, you know? Like, I mean, I know he was supported by the German, by the British, and he was a charismatic figure, you know?
Yeah, well, when you look at this video about the Weimar Republic and how the German nation was destroyed during the 1920s, they were not destroyed in the Second World War, but the war reparations that were imposed on Germany in the Treaty of Versailles, and then the way that the British and the French kept imposing impossible reparation payments onto the German people. By 1924, the German people were starving to death. And their whole industry was shut down in the country. Weeds were growing in railroad tracks. Weeds were growing in steel mill areas and so on. And there was no work. And so from 24 until 1933, when Hitler came to power, it was a devastated no man's land. Where the whole population was desperate in the same way that we're becoming desperate in this country today.
And like, outside influences are going to be able to support political figures here in a way that they were able to in Germany.
Yes.
Because of that new law.
And you saw that
the court decision.
That court decision, right?
Corporations.
Yeah.
Right. I noticed that. I hardly noticed anybody
passed the law that the corporations
realizing that
unlimited amounts that
we've really lost our
sovereignty.
What do we call it?
Identity.
Well, that too. Our elective, our representative democracy. We've really And it'll really show up in the elections in November by who gets elected. Like the corporations have got it. I don't pick up much
resistance to it.
It's like even a lack of of understanding that it really goes over the hill.
All of this has absolutely, totally to do with what we're studying here.
Uh-huh.
It's all intimately related with what we're doing here, what we're studying here. Because people, when Obama was campaigning and Hillary Clinton was campaigning against her, and Bill Clinton was helping her to campaign, she was going through the Rust Belt and saying, we need to restore American industry. We need to bring American industrial jobs back onto our soil. And so when she won Indiana, which is a Rust Belt state, against Barack Obama, Hillary and Bill Clinton were in the hotel room and they got a telephone call that advised them to withdraw from the race, telling them that Hillary in no way is going to become the president of the United States, and that if she doesn't withdraw, she might not live to see the day. And Bill Clinton told this story to Lyndon LaRouche, who then made it public. You know, but it was at that time that the whole country was then going crazy over this Barack Obama, who was promising change. I will come in and bring change. When Hillary finally did get knocked out of the race, and she decided to back Barack Obama, the whole country went into a frenzy over support for this guy. And look at him. Look at him. Right now, he's a Hitler in the bunker. I mean, the guy is a narcissistic egomaniac who is destroying our country in the same way that Hitler destroyed that. And the same intention, believe me,
with the permission of the people, including the United States.
Yes.
We've been so dumbed down
and apathetic and, you know, and no...
It's tough to get through that stuff if you don't have media.
Disagree with that, Ramdas, because he said he was going to enact change. He was going to close Guantanamo. He was going to end the wars in Afghanistan. He was going to reinstate habeas corpus. He was going to look into the FICA laws and not spy on Americans. He has lied about every campaign promise that he said he was going to do.
I'm not supporting it. And he sold us out
on the health care issue.
Yeah.
But you did this very generous thing.
We were voting in this progressive liberal, Roosevelt Democrat.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And a black man.
Yeah.
You know, against McCain. And he turns out to be the exact opposite.
And I'm also saying, and this relates to you supporting the congressman in Florida, it doesn't make any difference anymore. I mean, it's wonderful. That's what we did. That's how whatever success this democracy's had. But it's over now.
No.
The corporations have got it. They've got the dough. They can put in office whoever they want to do.
Okay, but the point, you see, is that this world is created by a creative intention. And we know that this creative intention is expressed in what we call God, and that exists in the form of our consciousness inside of the mind of every single human being, and that these politicians are telling us what they tell us, and so we're getting our thoughts coming at us from them, as well as being generated by our own experience, and then we have our intuition, and when we learn how to follow the process of our thought and our intuition, and we become successful at that, then we will no longer be susceptible to someone like that lying to us. We'll know instantly this guy is a liar. My intuition is telling me already that this guy is a liar. And what I'm, the reason that I'm happy that we're having this conversation today is because I know that this is a safety feature that is built into the human mind, that we never have to be susceptible to a liar, that we never have to be susceptible to the lies that our own mind tells us in reaction to our experience of eye consciousness, that we can learn how to live meditating on these processes in here and be free and be successful, and we can be riding across this ocean, this vast ocean of doubt.
And that's what's happening right here.
Well, that may be the only thing that saves us, because that is the way things are going.
Melanie?
I'm not without hope, Dominic. Yeah. Except
that's what they want us to believe.
Yeah, great.
I have hope, but it's like plan B.
Well, we have somebody who is
so
presenting in a way that we
really
think he's liberal.
Listen, we as a culture will never, ever be free of this kind of manipulation.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
As long as we are ignorant of these processes that are going on inside of us. And it says here, and I believe this, and it proves itself over and over again, this alone is the attainment of the nectar of immortality. This is indeed to catch hold of oneself. And that we as a society will never be able to catch hold of ourselves until a large successful number of us are able to do this.
Yeah.
And so here we are at 181 Wade Road in Liberty, New York on the 19th
out in the sticks
of July.
In the 2010. Land time forgot.
Yeah. Now we're not the only ones who are doing this. There are other people doing similar things to this. But how successful are they going to be? How successful is Kedar, is Acharya Kedar, going to be in his ability to teach people? How successful is Gurumayi going to be in her ability to teach people how to catch hold of their self?
Not very successful.
Okay, this is the question. Gurumayi is in there, right? Is she successful in teaching people how to catch hold of oneself? So that they can achieve the attainment of the nectar of immortality. I don't know that. I know that this method that I've
got. I know she got me here.
Pardon me?
Yes. She got me here right.
She gave people here.
Yeah.
And I also know it's a slow process, which is greatly accelerated with the blessing of us getting together with that understanding.
Yeah.
Like we get accelerated, like our transformation.
Yes, and we can accelerate the transformation of the world, of humanity, when we learn how to make this happen in a consistent way. And so I am telling you that I am not excited about having to leave this group and going to Albuquerque and have this bust up, you know, because I'm having fun here, right? I'm having fun with you, right? I'm having fun with you too, Ramdas. And with you too, Dominic, in spite of the fact that this is an uphill...
In spite of the fact that you're not a Jew.
In spite of the fact that it's an uphill thing for you. Because we're all to one extent or another locked in to our habit.
Yeah.
the habit that, you know, we're being cast down by the self into believing the reaction in the mind. And what's fun for me is that we can practice every week learning that's a trick.
Yeah.
That we can learn how to defeat that trick inside of ourselves.
Yeah. And just, you know, when you go safely like we talked about before. You know, use this as a base and go down for 2 weeks and come back. You know, do it. You know, do it pragmatically.
That's a shift back and forth.
What?
That's a long trip back and forth. It's a lot of driving.
3,000 miles.
He's got all of his stuff.
It's 2,000 miles.
Yeah.
It'd be safer if you took a plane. Yeah. Driving.
Except that when I get there, then I'm walking.
Yeah.
It's rough to walk around Albuquerque.
Well, when you come back here, you don't have to bring your car. You stay here.
Will you take me where I need to go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah.
Why don't you move out? Why doesn't everyone just move out there? That's the answer. What do you got here? What are you doing here? I got that city yoga ashram that I can walk into.
You can
walk past and
no, walk into three times a week and you save it.
Well, I plan on going there. I plan on spending my winters there.
Ooh. In
New Mexico? Me too. Yes. Yeah.
That might be
I have to generate income other than this stuff.
I have to depart at 1:30.
It's already 1:30.
No, it's 1:27. I thought the group was...
Okay, well, I didn't do anything with you because you told me you had no
right.
Meeting.
Right.
Yeah, don't come unless you're doing something with Nelson.
But anyway, it was a useful day.
Yeah, very, very useful.
It's a useful day because...
maybe if our bandwidth stocks work, then we can move out there and be independently wealthy.
Okay, we're waiting on that.
We're still waiting on that.
It's going to happen soon.
Yeah, Melanie owns stock in this great company too, right?
It will happen soon.
Really?
Well, when the need arises.
When the need arises.
When we have the need to do it.
Well, my concern was that it's just sort of a company that had a great idea. And
it's still there. It hasn't.
But it generated a lot of investment. And now they're asking for more investment. So does that mean that it's sort of a company...
They've run out of money, yeah.
No, they're not asking for more. Then they're forced to do a different strategy. You start with one idea, and then you start... You know, a lot of companies... I don't know. Don't want to end on that, though.
I'm just curious.
We'll get to that next time.
Yeah.
It's not over.
Oh,
no,
that's good.
It's definitely still there. And,
They've got that idea that apparently hasn't manifested yet,
but I'm still very quite confident about it from what I know. That's all I can say. So, yeah, when that happens, shoot.
Yeah, right.
Let me use the bathroom and I'll see you.
We'll just get a yacht and travel around the world.
Yeah. I'll be your guys' chef.
Oh, yay! We'll be in the money, and we'll
take
you
me with you.
Right.
Please don't leave me here.
No.
Alone.
By myself.
That's funny. Oh, God. Oh, you know, recently my mother died, and during the week before she had this cardiac arrest, I had the thought that, you know, every time I speak to her every day, she was, you know, many times it was okay, but sometimes it was abusive, you know.
What was okay?
The conversation. I had the thought that talking to somebody every day who could be hurtful to me was not healthy for me.
Could be what?
Talking to someone every day that could be hurtful for me was not healthy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the reason I mention it is because you're talking about the darkness of habit. She had her own darkness of habit, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though she had tremendous, I mean, when I go through her stuff, she was an amazing artist.
We got the greatest thing in the history of the world. We don't need anything. We don't need to wait for this to happen or that to happen.
No, I know.
No, we can start with what we got right now.
That's right.
All right, Rotharia.
We'll be here on Sunday, 2 at 11, right?
For your group, yeah.
Include yourself.
No, I won't be here Sunday.
Okay.
That could be Monday. Yeah. All right, everyone.
Okay.
Take care, Bob.
Thanks for your hospitality.
Yeah, a little hospitality.
Thanks for your presence.
Check the camera, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Thanks.
Anyway, I'm just going to make it really quick about my mom. I was just thinking that what it was doing to me, you know, every day to have somebody, you know, that I couldn't, you know, communicate with and be genuine and be comfortable and have to be twisted and agitated and angry, and how it was affecting me and my daughter and everything. So I was also wondering after she passed, like, what's it going to be like now? I don't have somebody being abusive to me, you know, and how that's going to free me up on some level, you know, like, you know, she's freed up. I know she's in an amazing place. And it's freed me from that, too, you know.
Yeah.
And she's free from me, you know, from hating me or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very, it's just interesting when you talk about habit. And, yeah, I agree. That it's, you know, there should be an opportunity for me to connect better with the guru and everything. I don't have that obstacle keeping me, you know, crazed and stuff. So it should be interesting. I just feel bad for Melissa, you know, because she was wonderful with my daughter, but with me, you know, she didn't understand that if she was nice to me, that would be being nice to my daughter.
I know.
Get that concept. Yeah. You know.
She was always trying. The grandma is always trying to win over the granddaughter.
Oh.
But the mother is always trying to educate the daughter.
Well, they had an amazing connection. They were very similar. Melissa's an Aquarius, she was Gemini. They both had Virgo moon, and they both had an association in their reptilian part of the brain.
Oh, really?
And then the other thing was also similar. So, so my mom had Leo, she had Aries. So I thought there were other, you know, they had an amazing, amazing connection. So.
Yeah, a lot of the same. Vibrations.
But they just, I mean, my mother was amazing with her. I was like, you know, another human being. If my daughter answered the phone and my mother thought it was me, she heard a different person on the phone. She was like shocking to her, you know. And then she said, "Grandma, it's Mel, it's Melissa." And she'd be like, "Oh," and her voice would change and everything. She'd be delighted. So, but
yeah, so. It's not you, it's her.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens in a lot of families.
Yeah. Well, it's typical in the Greek family. The daughter and the mother. The daughter is not honored in the Greek tradition, so she passed that down. Men were gods, you know. So, I didn't inherit that.
No, you didn't.
I didn't inherit that one.
Linda's grandmother, one day after she married Linda, after Linda married me, Linda and her grandmother were by themselves at her grandmother's house,
uh-huh.
And she says to Linda, she says, "Now, you know, if you're making breakfast for Dominic and you burn the toast, you eat that burnt toast. And you make Dominic some new toast."
Well, speaking of bread, you want to hear my dream?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was enjoying this dream I had last night. Do you want to use the bathroom first?
No, I just want to get a drink of water.
Oh, okay, I want to use the bathroom.
Oh, stop right away.